You know, how many of you remember several weeks ago Matt was talking about appropriate jokes about going to heaven? Remember that? Yeah, and how many of you raised your hand that you knew one? Well, you probably didn't know this, but I was up in that corner of the balcony jumping up and down and waving my arms, and he never called on me. I can't understand why he wouldn't call on me, unless he thought maybe it wasn't appropriate. So after church, he asked me, he said, well, what was your joke? And I said, oh, no, not going to tell you. I am going to find some way to weave it into my sermon on September 22nd. But let me tell you why I chose to do this and why I chose to tell this particular joke is that I've known Pastor Matt for years. I'm a member of his previous church. And Matt would always ask me to fill in when he had to be away. And it was always the same thing, you know, well, what's the series? Well, series is this. And then he'd share with me which part of the series he'd want me to do. And it was never the good one. You know, there was one time he asked me, he said, would you preach? I said, sure, what's the series? And he said, it's the Sermon on the Mount. And I'm thinking, awesome, I want to do Blessed Are the Geeks, because I am kind of one. And he said, no, I want you to do the Law and the Prophets. I'm like, what? That's the most boring part of the Sermon on the Mount. So it came around to this time, and what's the series? And he says, we're talking about life is more than a sitcom. And, you know, he covered Cheers a couple weeks ago and Modern Family. Next week is the Big Bang Theory. And what's he give me? The Simpsons. I am perfectly honest with you, I have never watched one episode of The Simpsons until 2 weeks ago. I've watched two episodes, and it was the same episode. I've learned a lot about The Simpsons in the last couple weeks. Duh. So here's the story. So it's actually not a joke. It was a dream I had a long time ago, and I dreamed I passed away, and I'm on my way up to heaven, climbing the stairs up to heaven. And, you know, I don't know if you noticed, but I'm a little bit greater girth than Pastor Matt is, and I have a bad knee. And so I got really tired climbing those long steps, and I actually had to stop and take a break because those steps go on and on and on forever if you're going up to heaven to the pearly gates. So I stopped to take a rest, and who do I see come up the stairs? Pastor Matt. And he's just flying up the stairs because, you know, he's got two new hips and he's lost all that weight and he looks great and he's in good shape. And he comes flying up to me and he says, are you okay, Steve? And I said, no, I'm exhausted. I don't know if I can make it. I said, but you're doing great. You look awesome. And he said, I feel great. He said, I tell you what, how about you climb on my back and I'll give you a ride the rest of the way up. And I said, I'll take you up on that. So we go up the rest of the way, we get to the pearly gates, and sure enough, there's St. Peter, and he looks at me and he says, well, hi, Steve, we're glad to see you, we've been expecting you, we want you to come right on in, but you need to leave your donkey outside. Kind of hoping next week this time I'll still have a job. But I want to play a clip for you. I actually downloaded a clip from this particular episode of The Simpsons. It's called In Marge We Trust, and listen up just a little bit.
Sermons about constancy and predicitude are all very well and good, but the church could be doing so much more to reach out to people.
Oh, I don't see you volunteering to make things better.
Okay, I will volunteer.
I wasn't prepared for that.
All done. I swept the aisles and put all the collection plates in the dishwasher. Well, you wouldn't believe how many dead pigeons there were in the organ.
Marge, you are a real time saver. Do you know, thanks to you, I've rediscovered a form of shame that's gone unused for 700 years?
Wow.
Lovejoy here. Reverend, this is Principal Skinner. I'm facing a crisis, and I didn't know to whom to turn. All right. Mother's gone too far. She's put cardboard over her half of the television. We rented Man Without a Face. I didn't even know he had a problem. What should I do? Well, maybe you should read your Bible. Any particular passage? Oh, it's all good. All right. Thanks anyway. Ugh. You handle it.
Me? No, wait, I can't. Hello?
Yeah, hi. I'm calling for Reverend Lovejoy. Who is this?
Oh, well, this is, The Listen Lady.
Now, if you haven't seen the episode, I'm going to just fill you in real quickly that she proceeds to actually start taking phone calls and meeting with people who have problems. And she basically tries to fix their problems for them. And as you watch more, there's just problems that ensue because of the listen lady. So that's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about being a good listener. We think listening is actually easy, but it's actually rather hard to do. Good listening requires so much more. It demands the initiative and energy that's not required in speaking. That's why faith comes from hearing, and hearing through the word of Christ, Romans 10:17. So if you bow your heads with me in prayer. Have thine own way, Lord. Have thine own way. You are the potter. We are the clay. Amen. The charter text for listening is the one we just heard. Let every person be quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger. It's really kind of simple in context, but it's probably a lot harder to pull off. I am convinced that this is an area that I need to improve in my life. I've known it my whole life. I'm going to guess that most of us probably are not good listeners. And if we're really honest with ourselves, because certain things happen when someone starts to talk to us and that we don't really do a good job of listening to them. Last weekend, the youth group went to see Double Cross. And you probably don't know what that is, but it's an outdoor, in the woods, interactive escape play that was put on by Morningstar Productions. I actually love this. It's a little bit, it creates some anxiety with us, but it's a lot of fun. So what the kids had to do, and the adults, we had to divide up into teams, and we had to go into the woods, meet with certain actors who represented people from World War II, the Nazi invasion of France. And our jobs were, we were French citizen entertainers on our way to Switzerland for a cultural event. And our job was to go in, learn the clues, the codes, deal with all the people. We don't know whether they're good guys or bad guys, and find Sophie, who was captured by the Nazis and being held prison, a little girl, because her parents were nuclear scientists. Help her escape, figure out the code to the combination, find her passport, and get her out of France into Switzerland. Along the journey, we were arrested by the Gestapo, which I understand is not a cold soup. That's what it was this morning when I said it by mistake. Gazpacho, is that how you say that? Yes. It's Gestapo. Now, the interesting thing about this little interaction with this Gestapo, and I'm going to say gazpacho, the Gestapo is, as he began to tell us the history of World War II and why it happened and how Hitler became into power and why he came into power, and he actually said, I became a firm supporter of Hitler and the Nazi movement because of what they were going to do for our country to help us out of our recession. And he said, but along the line, this is where it all began to change. He said, my brother-in-law, who's a Lutheran pastor, gave me a book called The Cost of Discipleship. Anybody know where you can find those words in our church? The Cost of Discipleship. Anybody know? That's exactly right. Thank you so much. The soda machine. On the side of the soda machine, it says The Cost of Discipleship, and it goes on to list what the cost of discipleship is. But then it says the cost of a soda is only a dollar. So we kind of want you to make a choice. So I'm encouraging all of you to go downstairs after church and buy a soda. The dollar will, read the sign, but the dollar will also help our ASP mission trip. So he said, I read this book called The Cost of Discipleship, and it was written by Dietrich Bonhoeffer. Dietrich Bonhoeffer was much more than just a theologian. He was also a youth pastor, and that's what his lifelong ambition was originally. He didn't have that ambition to be a pastor. He didn't have that ambition to be a theologian. He didn't have the ambition, actually, to be a martyr either. I'm not sure many of us do. He was put to death by the Nazis for attempting to assassinate Hitler. But he did teach us about being good listeners. So let's follow this. I've got 6 points, not three. I know that's against the rules, but we're going to fit them all in here. So point number one is that listening requires patience. Good listening requires patience. How many times have you actually started to tell somebody something, and before you get it done, they finish your sentence for you? Very frustrating. You know, and I guess I'm kind of guilty of that myself. you know, you're trying to always think ahead where the person is going, figure out what they're thinking. Well, Bonhoeffer calls that listening with half an ear, kind of listening with half an ear that presumes already to know what the other person has to say. This, he says, is an impatient, inattentive listening that is only waiting for the chance to speak. Oh my gosh, that's me. I hate to admit it. And sometimes we come up with the pat answers that we think people want us to say, and they're not the right ones. I'm recalling, I think, a Tim the Toolman Taylor episode where he's telling one of the other guys how to listen to his wife and what to say, you know, yes, dear, whatever you say, dear, blah, 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 and that which may or may not get you by for a little bit, and it works real well until the question is, did you remember to pick up the kids? Yes, dear, and you really didn't. So you need to be really attentive and listen with patience. I live out in Hubertus, which is near Holy Hill, and about a quarter of a mile from my house, there's a railroad track. It's the perfect distance. We have a no-whistle rule, so we don't have the train whistle, which I kind of miss. But at night, when it's cool and I have the windows open, I can hear the train go by, and it really is kind of a neat sound, right? But I have to cross that track twice a day, coming here and on my way home. Inevitably, you know what happens, especially on Sunday morning when I'm running late. The lights go on, the gates go down. And I can tell you this, that no matter how many times I've tried, I can never cross that railroad track until the caboose goes by. The coal trains just won't, coal cars don't let, you just can't do that. You got to wait till the caboose goes by. Wouldn't it be awesome if we learned how to do that with our listening, to keep our mouths shut and listen with both ears until the other person's caboose has gone by? Listen with patience. Poor listening diminishes another person, while good listening invites them to exist and matter. And that brings me to point number two. Good listening is an act of love. I'm really embarrassed to tell you this, but years ago when I was in seminary, a very good friend of mine came to talk to me about a problem they were having. And a few weeks later, I heard from another friend that this person was really upset with me. And let me tell you why. I didn't blow them off, but I didn't respond in a proper way. I use humor a lot to deal with conflict and stressful situations, which is a great coping mechanism, but not always appropriate. And that's what I had done. Really diminished this really good friend of mine. She didn't feel like her problems mattered. Good listening is an act of love. Yeah, how many of you know people who are fixers? You know what I mean by fixer? You tell them a situation in your life, and they have the ultimate answer on how to take care of it. You know, and I know they're trying to be good and helpful, but isn't it a little bit frustrating that you're throwing your whole life out? I'm opening up the dark side of my life, and you say, oh, that's no big deal. All you need to do is this and this. And what they're really telling me is that, well, you're kind of stupid that you can't figure out how to do this. You know, you need to listen to me. I'm smart and great, and I know everything. That's not what they really meant. They really meant to be helpful, but that's what it felt like. Good listening is an act of love. It goes hand in hand with the mindset of Christ. I want you to hear this. It flows from a humble heart that counts others more significant than ourselves. Number three, it asks perceptive questions. You know, when I took time off from working in the church to be a full-time dad, that was my big goal, and I went to work at American TV. Y'all remember American TV? Yep, the furniture manager was a church member here, and he wanted to hire me. And the store manager wanted to hire me, but the assistant store manager didn't want to hire me. And I didn't know this, but I went in for my second interview with the assistant store manager, and he's asking me all these questions, and I'm answering all the questions. Finally, he got really angry, and he slapped his desk with his hand really hard. It scared the bejeebers out of me. I thought, oh, I'm going to be sent to the principal's office. And he said these words. He said, what makes you think a minister can sell? I actually kind of giggled a little bit. And I said, well, what do you think we do for a living? We sell a product you can't see and touch, and we kind of raise a little bit of money doing it. Well, he started to laugh. He's a devoted Catholic. and he hired me on the spot. In 6 months, I was his top salesman. But I tell you that story because of this, because you learn that people who come into any store, any building, have a story to tell. Everyone has a story here today. And I found that if I took the time to listen to somebody's story when they came into that store, it was much more of a blissful experience for the both of us. It's so, you get wound up in that thing. You know what it's like walking into a furniture store or a used car lot or whatever. You walk in the door and soon, boom, there's a salesperson. What did you come in today for? What you looking for? What can I sell you? And buy, buy, buy. You know, and you're like, really? I haven't even got in the store yet, and you're already hitting me up to buy something. We had a gentleman at the store, and he was very loud, and you could hear him at the front of the store when a customer would come in. Hi, what brings you into the store today? And I always wanted to say my car, but then he would proceed not to let them answer, and he would walk them around the store telling them, oh, have you seen our new sign above our furniture department? Have you seen this? And never once taking the time to ask the questions so that he could hear their story. You need to ask perceptive questions, good questions that have open-ended answers, not tee up a yes or no answer, but gently peel the onion back to expose the deeper issues that each of us are facing. Ask perceptive questions. In number four, good listening is ministry in its purest form. Let me recap real quick. Number one was be patient. Number two, listening is an act of love. Number three was ask perceptive questions. Number four, good listening is ministry in its purest form. Get this. There will be days when the most important ministry we do is square our shoulders to some hurting person, uncross our arms, lean forward, make eye contact, and hear their pain all the way to the bottom. Hear their pain all the way to the bottom. It's ministry in its purest form. When I was in college, there was a young man who played on the basketball team, and I don't know what it was. He's very, very, he just didn't seem to like pre-theological students as I was. We seemed to intimidate him for some reason. I'm not sure why. And his response, his reaction to us was not to just avoid us, but to actually pick on us and bully us. And for some reason, I was the main target. I despised when Bill would be around the dorm. He just lived three or four rooms down from me. I hated seeing him in the middle of the campus because I knew what was going to happen. Well, one Saturday morning, I was not at the church working. I was actually at school, and I'm sitting in my room on my bed, and my door was open. Nobody else was around, and guess who walked in? Of course, it was Bill. And I thought, oh my gosh, oh Lord, what have you done? How can you do this to me? What kind of terror is he going to inflict this time? But he had this horrible look on his face, and he sat down on the edge of the bed, and he said, Steve, can I talk to you for a few minutes? I'm a little dumbfounded, and I said, well, yes. And he proceeded to take the next 30 minutes to tell me how he had just gotten back from the hospital with his girlfriend who just had an abortion. I don't want to say that I knew and did the right thing, but I accidentally did. I was so dumbfounded. I didn't know what to say, and I just sat there for 30 minutes with my mouth open and listened. Listening is a true act of ministry in its purest form. Number five, good listening prepares us to speak appropriately. And a good example is talk to any coach. Coaches will tell you the teams that did best, regardless of the win-loss record, was the team that listened the most. Teachers will probably tell you the same thing. Students who scored best on their scores at college or anywhere were the ones who listened. Music director, his best choirs are the ones who listen and follow. Am I correct? Yeah, absolutely. Listen to Neil. I certainly do. It prepares us to speak appropriately. So when you're in a situation listening to someone tell their story all the way to the pain, you will have the appropriate words then to respond out of love and out of grace. Sometimes good listening only listens and ministers best by keeping quiet, but typically good listening readies us to minister words of grace to precisely the place where the other is in need. And finally, number six, I told you we'd get here. Good listening reflects our personal relationship with God. How many of you have heard that small voice of God occasionally? Sure. I'm not talking about the voices in your head. I get those. The ones that tell you, hey, it's okay to eat that piece of pie. And the one that says, hey, nobody's around. Go ahead and have two pieces of pie. And it's always amazing how when the pie's all gone, that voice is all gone too. It's not there. That's not the voice I'm talking about. It's that still small voice of God. He who can no longer listen to his brother or sister will soon be no longer listening to God either. This is the beginning of the death of a spiritual life. Hear these words. Anyone who thinks that his time is too valuable to spend keeping quiet will eventually have no time for God and his brother, but only for himself and his own follies. Several years ago, my mom called me. She had gone through a traumatic divorce, and there were a lot of women who started calling her to talk because they were going through similar situations. And she called me. It was about 33 years ago. She called me and said, I just have to tell you this, Steve. She said, I've been talking to Wanda about what was going on in her life, and she would call and talk to me about things that were happening and such. And she said, I hadn't heard from Wanda in quite some time. And she said, I felt like I needed to call her and find out what was going on. I don't know why, it just popped in my head. Some small voice told me, call Wanda. So she said, I picked up the phone, and I dialed the number, and Wanda answered. And she said, Wanda, this is Barbara Lyerly. I just felt like I should call and check on you. And Wanda's response was, Barbara, I can't believe you called me. I'm sitting here with a bottle of pills, and I said, Lord, you have 5 minutes to stop me. Sometime that still small voice, we can't always hear it, but it's always there. And as Psalms 46:10 tells us, be still and know that I am God. I offer this as a closing prayer. Still, be still, my child. Be still and know that I am God. Wait, wait on my word to answer questions that you find so hard. Oh, rest, rest for a while, and let my spirit make you new. Still, oh, be still, my child, and know that I'll be God for you. Well, I've been watching you running around in your circles, looking so much like the world in all your ways, never seeking my truth or seeing my miracles, never taking the time to hear me say, hold still, hold, be still, my child. Be still and know that I am God. Wait, wait on my power to fight those battles that you find so hard. Oh, rest for a while. my spirit make you new. Still, oh, be still, my child, and know that I'll be God for you, and know that I'll